Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Encounters with the Unknown, Volume 2, Story 1. When I was 16, I went camping in the woods on a family farm at the back of the property. Camped near a small creek along a top bluff. Took my horse with me too, to be a 1,200-pound watchdog. About 10 o'clock, I'm laying back enjoying the campfire and owl hoots deep in the woods when I begin to notice the crickets are getting real quiet in a pattern that was circling behind me. I got scared and took the safety off my .22 rifle while straining my ears for any sound that would let me know what it was that was in the woods with us. Even my horse was getting a bit spooked. I'd had enough after 10 minutes of listening and threw a lot of firewood on the fire to make a big blaze to scare it off. Didn't work. After the fire died down, I could still tell it was nearby by how quiet the crickets were getting when it moved through their patch of brush they sung from. Grabbing up my gear, I kicked dirt and water over the campfire embers and took the horse's reins and wheeled it out for the back fence through the heavy mixed wood forest. Didn't even bother getting onto the horse after we went through the back gate. Just hit the fence, opened and closed the gate, then ran all the way back to the house across several wide cow fields and past the pond on a dark and chilly, nearly moonless night. Beat the horse back to the house by several minutes. She shows up in the yard blowing and scared like something might have been chasing her. Never knew what it was that was trying to get around behind us, but I never went camping again unless I had a larger weapon than a .22 rifle with me. It might have been a sneaky coyote smelling the food I had cooked, or it might have been a bear. I'll never know. Story 2. I grew up outside of a little town in midwestern Kansas, on the south side of Fork Nenasca River. I spent my youth slogging through the backwaters and running through the woods with a friend of mine, catching snakes, turtles, fishing, and just generally exploring. Every year, like clockwork, at the end of February, the river would flood. It was cold, wet, and muddy. But being kids, we were resilient and continued beating the brush and splashing through the water. How we never got hypothermia, I'll never know. I was about 10 or 11 years old that particular time, and we did as we always did. Hiked way down river and spent the day exploring until mid-afternoon when me and my buddy climbed through the mud banks and found a little island that was relatively dry. To get to this little sanctuary, you had to wade through knee-deep mud all around and climb through muddy wet brush or swim the river. Well, we were sitting there watching the river flow and talking when all of a sudden we both turned around at the same time. There was an old man standing there, about 6 feet tall, dressed in denim overalls, a plaid shirt, and an old blue ball cap on. Looked like a farmer, which wasn't out of place, given the rural town. He looked at us and said, "You boys better be careful when the water's up like this." We looked at each other for a moment, then looked back, and he was gone. Vanished. The eerie part is, he was spotless and dry as he stood there, and there weren't even any tracks in the mud. We hightailed it back home not long after that and didn't tell anyone for years. I don't talk to my buddy from back then very often anymore, but when I do, we still talk about that time on the river. A couple years ago, I went back to my hometown and decided to go back down to the river for old time's sake. It was summer and well over 10 years since I'd been down there at that spot. To this day, I get that strange feeling of not being alone when I go down there. Next story. I live in the outskirts of two fairly big towns in Florida, Melbourne and Palm Bay. There's a large area that was cleared and roads laid, but the city ran out of funds back in the 80s and couldn't finish the large development. So now it's all grown up and people use it for dirt biking, ATVs, RC plane flying, and numerous other random activities. My buddies and I used to go out there and do a bit of drag racing back in 2003 to about 2007. In the early hours of the morning. Well, one night, we went out there around 2 a.m. The idea is to have the people that are going to race lined up and one other that either wasn't racing that night or wasn't set to race until later would drive down to a crossroad that we measured out to be slightly longer than a quarter mile. My car would be parked parallel to the road, and I would hit the blinker on my car for whichever side won. Well, my car was down for upgrades, so I was calling the races all night. This place is pitch black at night, not a single light around, and it's close to the city, so you wouldn't expect any crazy wildlife. Well, as the cars are turning around, the people are arguing and trying to make bets and whatnot, and I got chills. Something told me that I wasn't alone. All I had was my cell phone as a source of light and my cigarette lighter. I strained to listen and see, but couldn't gather anything. When all of a sudden, the headlights came on from two cars that were up to the race, and there was a panther in the middle of the road, about 20 feet from where I was. I screamed like a little girl and ran to my car. It was scared crapless by my unmanly bellow that had darted the opposite direction. I was scared to death. Of course, no one else saw it, and they just started the races as normal. I was done for the night and told my friends about it. I went on home and considered it that it was my luck for that night and would most likely get arrested by the local PD if I'd stayed. Next story. I'm a civil engineer from the UK, and during the 90s I was working in Russia plotting new routes for electricity pylons. This work would often take us deep into the Russian wilderness. We spent roughly 6 months in Moscow planning the route the pylons would follow, and then we'd set off to survey the chosen routes. We'd operate from a large base camp, which meant that there were literally hundreds of people around, but we'd go out in teams of 12 into the wilderness for about 5 to 10 days at a time. We were in constant contact with our base camp. During one of these surveying missions, we were taking measurements from the edge of a ridge overlooking a vast basin that contained an equally vast forest. I didn't spot it, but one of the surveyors spotted a trail of smoke coming from amongst the forest. We all openly wondered amongst ourselves who could be camping so far away from civilization. The guides told us that it was unlikely to be members of any indigenous forest-dwelling tribe, as they'd all been removed on since the 60s. Anyway, our route would take us down into the forest basin, so the guide said it would be okay for us to have a look, as even they'd grown curious. I still felt uneasy and slightly creeped out to this day by the events that followed, but I'll give you all the details nonetheless. After spending about an hour approaching the general direction of where the smoke trail had been spotted, we all began to realize, via the derelict huts, fences, and watchtowers, that we'd wandered into what had been a gulag. We were under no illusions, and the evidence was there for all to see. There was also evidence of recent human activity, in the form of magazine dated 5 or so years previous, items of clothing and old medicine packets. Then we found what had been the source of the smoke, and the doused embers were still wet. By now, anxiety had begun to spread. The guides started to issue the handguns our company had insisted on us all carrying for insurance purposes in case we crossed the path of a bear or mountain cat. I can't remember the name or brand of the weapon, but we divided up the ammunition into a share of 20 bullets per man. I'd only ever fired a pistol once before, and that had been a long time ago. I found myself in the situation I was in now, and we agreed that we started hiking out to the nearest clearing, which, much to my private relief, was only about half an hour away. Once we made the clearing, things got a lot stranger. As soon as the people in front had cleared the tree line, I began to hear anxious gasps. Once I saw what had caused their discomfort, I knew instantly that something was very wrong. So did our guides. In the middle of the clearing, there was a large, four-story house that had been covered in crude graffiti. The guards translated some of the messages scrawled on the walls, and it soon became apparent that this had been the Gulag Guards accommodation building. We pensively approached the building, noting that there had obviously been a violent confrontation. There were bullet holes in the rendered walls, rusty shell casings on the grass. Suddenly we heard a shout from somewhere calling us to the front of the house. We all gathered round, and one of the others pointed up at the ridge. Standing there was a group of men, one of whom was holding a primitive torch, basically a lit petrol-soaked rag on a stick. He began shouting at us in Russian, which the guides told us was incomprehensible ranting. Looking through some binoculars, one of our group, a Canadian called Mark, told us that there were women and children standing among the group. I had to look for myself, and he was right. They all looked very bedraggled, hollow-eyed, and malnourished. One of the guides fired his pistol into the air a few times to show that we were armed, but they just stood there completely unfazed. We tried to contact the base camp, but couldn't get a signal on our walkie-talkie. This was the 90s, way before the sophisticated cell phone technology we take for granted today. In the end, we decided that we had no choice but to hike through the forest back up to the top of the ridge. We spent an incredibly anxious hour and a half walking through the pine forest, constantly aware that we were being watched. We eventually made it back up to the ridge and got through to the base camp and requested an immediate helicopter evacuation. By then, the group that had followed, watched and followed us some more, were nowhere to be seen. We arrived back that evening and explained what had happened. We all spoke about it over dinner the following evening and all came to the conclusion that the group we encountered had some connection to the gulag we passed through and possibly something to do with a violent event that had undoubtedly occurred outside of the house we saw. I honestly don't know who they were, but speculation at the time was that they'd been some sort of revolt in the gulag and that they'd stayed hidden in the woods, completely unaware of the collapse of the Berlin Wall and the oppressive regime in the former USSR. It could be possible as they or we were thousands of miles from the nearest town, and they no doubt wanted to avoid the brutal consequences of escaping from custody. But I remain skeptical, as I couldn't fathom how they could have survived the long, harsh winter that part of the world is notorious for. I guess I'll never know. Next story. When I was about 10, maybe a little younger, my family and I went to stay with some family friends up in the north of England. I forget where exactly. These friends had just moved into a huge old house, which they were having some work done on. I loved exploring that old house. One day, I was running around the outside of the house, playing with some other children. Along one side of the house, it was virtually overgrown with ivy and tall bushes, which I'd crept into to hide. I remember the wall feeling very cold, and I looked up and saw a tiny window, far too high to reach, all grimy and dirty, set high up on the wall, hidden from view by the tall bushes and foliage growing up that side of the house. Anyway, running in and out and around the house, I pretty quickly got used to all the nooks and crannies of the place and loved it. But something nagged me about this little window you couldn't see from the outside. And then I realized you couldn't see it from the inside either. I crawled all over that old house and never got to a place inside which corresponded with that tiny window. I mentioned it one morning, and none of the owners of the house had seen it. I took them behind the bushes and pointed up at the tiny window, and they traced the wall around, and we came to the kitchen. They determined that there must be some kind of hidden chamber behind the kitchen wall. Now, they planned to completely redesign the kitchen anyway, and the owner of the house decided he would use a sledgehammer to break through the rear wall of the kitchen where he thought this chamber might be and open it up. I remember watching excitedly as he set about smashing into the rear wall of the kitchen with a massive hammer. It took some time, but after a while he dislodged several bricks and began pulling them out until a reasonable hole had been made. We then peered in with a torch and saw this chamber. It was about twice the height of the kitchen and comprised of an odd arrangement of walls at funny angles, more of a weird shaft than a room. High up on the outside wall was the tiny window, all grimy and dusty. But strangest of all was the fact that right in the middle of the floor of the chamber was a tiny wooden child's chair. Next story. This part didn't happen to me, but happened to my mom and sister. Back in 1962, Mom and my sister were walking in the woods of some property my mom had just bought, near a very deep gully in the woods with a trace of chilly water running at its bottom. She told me she suddenly felt this intense sense of horror. She didn't know where it came from or why she was feeling such a horrible emotion of terror. There was nothing there for her to be afraid of, and the sudden sensation puzzled her. My sister confirmed to her that she too suddenly felt a strong sense of fear. Mom then had this image of a Native American man in her mind, and that he was extremely angry about something. She could clearly see him and feel his anger in her mind. Coupled with a sense of terror and mental image, my mom and sister left immediately. The further they were from the gully's edge, the weaker the sensation of fear and horror. About 5 years ago, I'm on the end of this gully where it starts onto the property. Up here, the gully is very shallow, wide, and easily driven across. Walking through very tall grass near a pond, I suddenly felt an extreme anxiety of indescribable horror. I was very puzzled about suddenly feeling like this, and I looked around thinking there might be a rattlesnake close by and that my senses just picked up on it faintly. Didn't see any snakes or anything that might cause me to feel suddenly afraid and ready to bolt out of there like a scared deer. Curious, I walked around the pond, feeling the intense sensation of horror. It felt like it was coming from the outside in, because up until then I was having a very good day roaming through the farm and being at peace with nature and always doing a little pre-season deer sign scouting. After a while, it faded and left me with a question of what was that. I did a little research about the area, and back during the Civil War times, there was a small battle with Union and Confederate cavalry and ground troops nearby at Big Sand Creek. Big Sand Creek, where it crosses the old Port Gibson Road, is about half a mile from the property. During this fight, several men were killed, and many were wounded, and many more ran through the woods for 5 miles to escape a certain death from the hands of seasoned Union soldiers. A Lieutenant Stickle led the Union charge against the Texas cavalry. I've heard of residual energy that marks the place where a great trauma has occurred, so I might have experienced this energy. The Union soldiers pursued and killed the Confederate soldiers as they chanced upon them during the chase, and I'm certain more than one rebel soldier felt horrified as he saw death approaching, riding a horse and wearing a blue uniform. No doubt, that is what me, my mother, and my sister experienced at the same spot so many years apart. Next story. Back in the early 80s, I was a gamekeeper working in a large block of forestry below an escarpment. In this forest, we had 3 release pens for pheasant poults, these being large wired enclosures into which young poults were released in order to acclimate them to the surroundings before either flying or being let out and then fed throughout the forest, which held them there for the shooting season. Anyway, our second pen, as it was known, was in a small half-mile-long gully or valley below this escarpment, and on a night myself and 2 other keepers who also worked in this forest did not like at all to be in this particular gully once dusk or darkness fell. We all said it was an eerie, godforsaken place, and just to be left there after dark gave us all the creeps and made the hair stand on end. By the way, we were all hardened, tough woodsmen. Half a mile away, just outside the forest edge, there's an old farmhouse which stands on the side of a monastery which prospered there back in the 11th through the 13th century. History books record that the monks who farmed there own carp and other fish for the tables from small lakes they built into the narrow, crystal clear stream that ran out of the hillside above and down past the monastery. This, the only such stream, fed down the bottom of the gully and ran through the middle of our pen, purposely built there to supply the poults with water. We could clearly see the old embankments in several places in this valley, and our pen was partially built right in what would have been one of the lakes. One night, right on the edge of dark, I was walking around the top curved corner of the pen, wire with the 22 rifle. When through the wire, I saw a figure of a person for perhaps 5 seconds. Just 40 yards away, hurriedly walking around the pen side to meet me. I glanced away for just a second, then looked back, and could no longer see this person headed to meet me. I proceeded cautiously, thinking it was one of my buddies, and he'd be hidden behind a tree to jump out and spook me. When in seconds I got to where I had last seen this figure, no one had jumped me, and looking about the trees, which were not thick enough to hide a person, the area was bare, and believe me, I checked the area out thoroughly. There was no one. This really spooked me, and I hightailed it out of there fast. All I could think was that I had seen the ghost of a monk protecting his lake. Now, the kicker to this story is that in the 90s, when I eventually got a computer, became proficient in searching the web, I looked up the history of a battle that I knew had taken place somewhere in the area between the English and Scots. This battle took place in 1322. There's a description that there's a large earth mound covered in young trees, nearly 200 yards long by 50 yards wide, where the bodies of nearly 8,000 English dead are buried. This mound and the gully where the battle was actually fought, I since located by the Ordnance Survey coordinates given in the battle's account. Yes, the battle was fought in the gully where we had our pen, and the burial mounds is only 400 yards away from it. Still gives me the creeps to this day. And who or what the hell did I really see that night? Next story. I've had 3 or so isolated encounters that I believe are all related and possibly with the same thing. I grew up in a town called Kings Park on Long Island, New York. As a 12 to 15 year old, BMX bikes were all the rage, and during the summer, 3 of my friends and I would travel all over Kings Park, Sunken Meadow State Park. We called it Sunken Ghetto because busloads of undesirables from the city would use the beaches on the weekends. And there was also Long Island Sound that we'd bike through, Kings Park Psychiatric Center, which was closed up and abandoned, would hook up with the old dock road that led straight to the bluff, the boat basin. Now, just for the record, old dock road I always found to be creepy, with a mixture of dense woods and bizarre fauna, in that one could sense the woods were holding their breath, just waiting to pounce, and yet seductive and inviting, which kind of appealed to me. It was a late afternoon August day, and I was pedaling back up Old Dock Road. I knew that the back of my neck was burnt for sure. I stopped to catch my breath at the intersection of St. John Land Road and Old Dock. And do you know those moments when things slow down and speed up all at the same time, and you're keenly aware of your heartbeat, your breathing, the buzz of each individual kind of insect, the vastness of the sky? I put down my backpack and rod at the side of the road and made the right turn to go up to St. John Land. I'd never been up that way. I just knew it was still part of the hospital psychiatric grounds. I rode up about 50 feet and I still had that feeling, and I guess I'd rode over some glass and my front tire was done. I turned over the bike to see how bad it was, and the heebie-jeebies came on full force. I was moving in real time, but everything around me just freaking shut off. No breeze, no rustling trees, no insects. Jesus loves you. I looked up, and there's this older-than-dirt woman in a brown blouse and a long gray, kind of thinking wool, but plenty hot on a day in August, standing there with a big old black purse and an umbrella handle around her wrist. "How's that?" I ask. And she repeats, "Jesus loves you." I noticed 2 things. Well, actually maybe 3. The background noise hasn't kicked back in. Her mouth was like a rictus, like a wormhole burned into rotted fruit, with 2 or 3 pieces of corn as teeth. But the eyes were so clear, gray, kind of sharp, penetrating. "You're going the wrong way," she said. Now, I'm not overly religious in the sense of man-made religions, but I do believe there is some kind of higher authority. Well, again, she says, same thing, and I'm thinking, Jesus loves me, huh? Where'd you come from, a nut house? She seems effed up to me, and I'm not getting her message. Then she clicks her tongue and tells me that I need to get off the path. The background noise restarts, and I decide to turn around. When I hear, and remember, I walk less than 20 paces, and then I turn around to say something, and she's not there. Now I'm spooked, like it's Close Encounters of the Bedpan kind, and I grab my gear and started pushing my bike up Old Dock Road. I'm sweating like a pig when I'm coming up on the turn by the junior high, and I start shaking so bad. I'm looking back and ahead, and I decide I'm going to hide in the woods. I had just gotten behind some thick shrubs and thicker trees, and I hear a loud 30-second tire screech. A car had lost control and rolled right down the side of the road where I was walking. Second time I'd seen it was in one of the buildings we used to play Army and Dungeon and Dragons in on the hospital grounds. It was pre-World War II, with bunkers and tunnels connecting all the buildings. I ended up in all places, the chapel. And that effed up feeling comes in, and I'm just leaving the chapel, down a short crop of stairs, and open a door and hear a noise behind me. I step through the doorway and plow into this brown-haired hobo-looking guy carrying a pigeon. He grabs me under the elbow, asks me what I'm doing in his house. Then I notice his eyes, gray. He shakes me again, and I'm instantly thinking of that lady from a couple of summers back. "I remember you," he says, chuckling. I hear the background noise of my friends play fighting with sticks and aluminum garbage can lid shields. I shrug him off and I hear, "Life's not easy, you know. Not everyone makes it through without getting a few bumps." I tell him to F off and shove him. He bounces off the plain wall behind him. I ran from the room and I'm about to the hallway when I hear, and "He loves you, don't forget, okay?" Mocking. I turn around to say, "F off," and die again, and I'm talking with nobody. The real effed up part is the wall I pushed him up against was bare, but now had nailed to it a spread-eagled pigeon. Now, the third encounter I had was right before my liver transplant. It was a guy next to me in my room. By that time, I was so bad and near death, I could see other people, plain as day, that were very sick, like they had a gray hue to them. We spoke about death, when to die, when to fight. A very strange conversation. I went to sleep that night. I went into a 10-day coma. I dreamt I was on a ferry boat and that the nurses who were attending me were singers on stage. The boat was filled with famous people and people from my past. Then it dawned on me that everyone on board was dead. I saw my grandfather, met my mother's father I never knew. After dinner, my grandfather hugged me and said, "Have a good trip home." I woke after a 10-day coma from ammonia buildup in my brain. In the end, I did get my new liver. The story behind that is I'd gotten hep C as an infant in the late 60s from 18 operations due to gastrointestinal problems as a newborn. I died 2 times for over 13 minutes. Now, what's really strange is it turns out I never had a roommate at the hospital. Next story. A bit of background on my friends and I. We're all New York City natives, born and raised, grew up in the city our entire lives, never really spent any time at all in the real wilderness. I've done some overnight camping with my dad growing up near Lake House. Nothing too major though, simple tent, hot dogs and beans, maybe 20 hours total trip. Well, 3 years ago, two of my friends and I decided to pack up our gear and go camping for 3 days in the northern Catskills of New York. We packed up our brand new high-tech equipment, load up with $200 worth of food, and prepare for a real survivalist weekend. Heavy sarcasm now, but we were really absolutely clueless. We got to our original destination to find that the campsite was little more than a cleared patch of land, literally next to the freeway. Not our idea of the survivalist weekend we had originally envisioned. We drove around aimlessly for an hour until we see this dingy sign for hunting camping. We pull the car and eventually find the main house with a couple in their 40s or 50s. Sure, you can use the land for camping. $12 a night. You can hike in and the firewood's for sale, etc., etc. They also said, there is another family camping, so please be respectful. We start our hike in with our gear and quickly realize it's not much of a trail as it's fully untamed brush. After 2 hours, we find a clearing that is coincidentally about 100 to 200 yards from the other family. We do a friendly wave and they wave back. Mom, Dad, and three kids, about 8 to 10 years old, running around enjoying nature. We start to set up camp and decompress. It's not often we get to sit and not hear 10,000 noises at once. We decided to split up duties and get the camp ready. One friend set up the tents and the tarps. Another set up the camp. A lot of useless gear, remember. And I left to get firewood. So I'm walking through the woods aimlessly, collecting wood, looking for tracks, dung, scratches on trees. Nothing at all that I found. Suddenly I stop in an area and start loading up on small branches. After about 3 minutes, I look up and realize that 20 feet away from me is this guy just standing there, dressed in a sharp-pressed, literally looked brand new and fully starched, green cart suit. I yell and drop the wood and start laughing. Holy shit, man, you really scared me for a second. The guy doesn't respond at all. No facial expression, no weird eyes, just a normal guy staring at me perfectly still. I said, "You okay?" No response. I grabbed my wood and headed back to the camp to tell my friends. They made jokes about me being a forest bride and I better not get my dress caught in a tree. Typical moronic guy stuff. We drank some beers, whiskey, and then go to sleep. Woke up the next morning and all of our firewood is gone, along with any remnants of our fire. We did not have a huge fire, but our fire pit honestly looked like it was swept clean. At first, we thought the family across the way was screwing with us, so my friend walked on over to see what was up. Family turned out to be really nice and said they hadn't taken our wood and that they hadn't had any problems at their camp. Day goes on and we're being city kids in the woods, chopping down fallen branches for no reason at all, staring at the sky, etc., etc. This time, my friend is on wood detail. He comes back an hour later with a similar story. I saw that guy you were talking about. Looks like he came out of a bad Cabela's magazine. What the F is his problem? We have a laugh and start the fire for dinner. At around 8 p.m., it's now pitch black and we're sitting around the fire shooting the breeze. We can see the fire from the family at the next camp. All of a sudden, we all get this feeling that I can only describe as unexplained dread. Growing up in the city, you learn to turn off a lot of your personal space meters because you'd scream your head off if you didn't. For whatever reason, though, we all knew something was up and that we should probably stay sharp, as in sober. At the time, we thought it was an animal or something. So, we went to bed, stone sober, at around 10 p.m. because our nerves can't take it anymore. Screw it. Let's go to sleep so that we don't have to deal with this. Around 2 a.m., we've all woken up simultaneously by a very loud but short scream. The type of noise that is so loud and so quick, you almost aren't sure if it happened. We rush out of the tent into pitch blackness to realize that our embers are totally out as well as the family's embers across the way. We grab our brand new flashlights and start looking around our camp. Everything is totally fine, except for the fact that our fire is brushed clean again and our wood is gone. How the hell did anyone brush out fire clean in 4 hours without any of us hearing anything? At this point, we're totally freaked out because even though we're stupid city kids, we know something like that isn't normal. We have no way to start up the fire again and didn't have the wits about ourselves at the point to do it anyway. We get back into the tent, turn our lights off, and try to tune in to our surroundings. After about an hour, we hear something that is in the campsite. We rush out of the tent. Chairs are gone. Now we're really freaked out because this isn't a ghost. This isn't a bear. This is some nut job or loser screwing with us, and we have no idea he's even 10 feet away from us. We argued about trying to hike out or stay up outside the tent and realized that we're too inexperienced to try to make it back to the main house in pitch blackness through the brush. We decide the best thing to do is to make a perimeter and just scan the trees with the lights all night. Around 6 a.m., the sun starts to come up, so we collectively sigh and say, okay, let's go. Go to the tent. We left a zipper open. The backpacks are gone. I've never been so close to throwing up and shitting my pants in my life. I don't believe in ghouls or gunnies, and I'm aware of the frailties of man, but some crazy bastard snuck into our tents with three of us awake and actively scanning and stole three bags without us even knowing. Keep in mind, we weren't more than 20 feet away from the tent from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. Now, we've been up all night waiting for the first signs of light. We run over to the family site to find them completely gone. No tent, no fire, no ash, no wood, no sign of anything. We grab our tent and haul ass up to the house. We get to the house, and at this time we've calmed down and feel better because we're back to a building with people, as in city safety theory, stupid, huh? We very calmly start talking to the old man about what happened and about the family not being there. He explodes at us. What the F are you talking about? There's no family out there. Only you shits. Get the F out of here. I'll shoot you on my porch. We literally all jump because his response came out of nowhere, and it honestly was like a scene from a bad Deliverance knockoff. At this point, my friend jumps in and says, the family that your wife told us not to bother, you crazy asshole. I bet you're going to give us some bullshit story about the Cabela's guy too, huh? As soon as my friend said that, old man's face dropped from total rage to kid in the cookie jar. He said, get off my property, without turning around. We drove home totally dumbfounded. We know there are no such things as boogeymen or ghosts, and we know what a bully is capable of. This wasn't any of that. I don't know what happened to the family, but I sure as hell know that three kids and two adults can't break down a full campsite at night without light, without noise. I am certain that the scream was real, and I don't even want to think about what that big F did to them. There aren't a lot of sick men in the world, but the true psychos do have an eerie, unnatural ability to them. I'm trying to get up the nerve to camp again, but realize that I'll probably be on the edge the entire time. Maybe that's a good thing, but I still haven't made up my mind to do it.